Hello and welcome to another episode of 404 Cybersecurity Not Found. I think we're at episode 7 today. You'll notice that I'm not David, I'm Neil, as David is currently off enjoying himself at the seaside. I won't give his location away, or I'm sure if you looked on his Twitter you'd know exactly where he was. I'm here with Luke today. Hey Luke.
Hey.
How you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you, mate. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. Happy for the end of a Friday where we've got a bit of sun outside. So I'll be going off to go enjoy some of that while it's still here. By yourself?
Not a lot. I think just be beer in the garden or something like that, perhaps. We'll see.
Good. I mean, like you say not a lot, but that's I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, well, after a busy week, you gotta wind down somehow, haven't you?
Have the alcohol to help you.
Yeah, drink when you're pain.
Cool, well, we're best get back to business, we're going to get distracted. So yeah, just the two of us today. So we're going to do a couple of short ones. We're going to talk about in this episode, as you could probably have guessed, the Twitter hack, what we've heard about that's gone on with it, why it could have happened, what could have been done, and all those kind of things. And then we're going to look at the difference between penetration testing and vulnerability assessments, which is a common question that we get asked. So we thought we might try and put some information together for people to try and hit the nail on the head of what the differences are. So onto the Twitter hack, as probably anyone listening probably heard, it's been big news. A number of accounts this week got hacked on Twitter. Lots of high profile sort of accounts. We had Elon Musk, Bill Gates, I believe Warren Buffett was in there, along with a number of high profile companies. They all tweeted that if you were to send them $1,000 in bitcoins, they would magically repay you with $2,000. And it was, as hacks go, it was a quick smash and grab, and I believe it was quite successful. I was just checking the Bitcoin wallet, and they received in total 12.86 Bitcoins, which is just under £100,000, which most of that has been removed from the wallet. So, you know, as a malicious sort of action goes, they've done quite well out of it. And it seems, yeah, that's it's not a good sign, is it? Because that means that it shows that there can be quite some benefits to performing these kind of attacks. What do you think, Luke?
Yeah, I think, well, it's pretty unbelievable, to be honest. Like some of the high level people in there, like politicians, Barack Obama as well. Like, and when I saw that Elon Musk had tweeted it, I thought, like, is it just Elon? That was the difference. Like, you see some of the other people, but is it just you? No, it wasn't. I just think it's incredible that something like that could happen, and somebody could orchestrate such a thing to happen almost at the same time. And it does make you think, like, the inside sort of knowledge that must have gone into it, or somebody must have sat in the environment for a while to work out what levers to pull in order to get everything to happen at exactly the same time.
Massively. I mean, when I first saw it, you probably felt the same thing. I'm like, okay, someone's left their account with a bad password, or there's, you know, it was the individual that was at fault. They've not got 2FA on. They've, you know, the person's done something wrong here. The individual could be seen to be more at fault. But then as more and more accounts looked like they're being compromised, and so several accounts came out and said, we have a strong password and we have 2FA. I was like, the narrative changed. This is not, you know, an individual that's had a weak password, left themselves logged in somewhere, you know, shared that account in some insecure way. It's actually, you know, something deeper than that, really.
Yeah, and I don't think anybody knows for sure, yeah, at least at the time of recording, exactly what happened. But, we've been reading quite a few reports that it's been something to do with Twitter's internal, like, moderation tools, or something to do with Twitter's tools that they use just to keep the platform, like, nice and safe and make sure people aren't sprouting, like, too much rubbish about it. But, yeah, it's do you think it was a malicious insider, or do you think that somebody, a hacker, got in there and used these tools themselves?
It's a tricky one. So from what I've been reading and looking online, looking at reports, and it's sometimes very difficult to work out what reports come from sources which are actually legitimate and what are kind of rumours and theories and things, is that there was apparently somebody boasting on some darknet forums that they were like, oh yeah, I've got access to these Twitter accounts. Look, here's some proof of the admin panel. You know, who wants to make some malicious money kind of thing. Whereas before I heard about that, and I'm not to know that how true that is, I was thinking, you know, could an insider have been compromised? Could there be somebody malicious in there? Somebody cajoled? Somebody threatened? It's that kind of, we talk about the malicious insider a lot in cybersecurity, and it's the kind of thing that we always talk about but never happens so much, if you know what I mean. Like, I'm sure it does happen, but it's normally, oh, it's a phishing scam, it was something else, rather than, oh, there was one person in the call organization who decided to either, you know, to go off on as a lone wolf and do something that was quite shocking. I've seen lots of different reports, but I definitely believe, obviously, that it was a hack, an attack that affected Twitter internally. Whether that was, say, some kind of hacker who broke in and got this access to these dashboards and these accounts, or somebody inside that either leaked those, allowed those details to be given to somebody else, or was acting in a malicious way, is to be seen. I mean, I've seen the FBI apparently, as you can imagine, investigating and looking at different sort of ideas and things, and I'm sure there'll be more news that will come out over the next few weeks, hopefully, because I'm quite interested to know, how it was perpetrated. How did they get access to this? Because when you think about the power of Twitter and the accounts and potentially the information that you would have access to, the direct messages, the DMs, it's quite a treasure trove of information, really.
Oh, for sure. And like, I think that was because there's been quite a few people like asking why Trump wasn't part of like these attacks, like self-proclaimed like king of Twitter. Because like, if you could get hold of his account, then you probably would, right?
Yeah. Well, here's the thing, right? Here's a random theory, right? What if they had access? Let's presume they had access to loads and loads of data. Could this be a few stages? Could stage one have been, right, we'll do a quick smash and grab and try and get some money, but also we've hoovered up all the DMs, and we can use those DMs later, either by releasing them, by holding people to ransom. So, oh, we've got DMs that show you said this or you did this, etc. Or actually DMs that, I don't know, imagine there was a DM between two people that worked in an organization, and it was about that the stock price was, or something was going to happen that would affect the stock price. There's so many things you can do with that powerful information, isn't there?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's just, it's mind-boggling, isn't it, how Twitter has this sort of power over the world. It's every time, yeah, like Trump or like Elon tweets, then either, well, the world panics or the Tesla stock price also.
Well, it went down, but it's gone through the roof recently, hasn't it? I think it's...
Yeah. Yeah, would have loved to have been on that train. But yeah, there's some people, I think the White House press secretary said, that was, I think I read that in a Krebs article, actually. He's always got some good coverage, and this is no exception. But a member of the White House said that restrictions have already been put on Trump's account, so that's why they couldn't access it, because I think people have already, like Twitter insiders, have already tried to moderate his account or access
in some way. Okay.
So there were, yeah, she said that there was already some controls on his account, and that's why.
So if we're taking, say, the example of, if I was a Twitter employee and I have access to this admin dashboard, and I can access near enough anybody's tweets, anyone's accounts, and all those kind of things, but Trump and maybe a few of us are put into a category that you've got to be, I don't know, a super admin, or you need additional access, additional control to get access to that data.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was reading as well, like some people comparing it to like medical records or like records in a bank. So if you say if you're a doctor, but you're a doctor to a person in the public eye, say, Boris Johnson, if you wanted to view his patient record, like you have to, it's all audited. So if you go in there and there isn't a legitimate reason for you to do so, then that's going to be instant dismissal. But I think it must be kind of like a similar system that they've got there. Like you can't just go and break the glass on somebody's Twitter data in the same way that you can't do that to a person in the public eye, because I'm sure there's many interesting things on like Boris Johnson's bank statements or health information.
What are you insinuating?
You just shouldn't just go and ask.
No, but I know what you mean. Like it's interesting though. So two fronts. So there's two parts of this conversation I'm interested in. First one is, well, you know, the ability to have access to that dashboard, even if a few people are excluded, is massive. And secondly, yeah, should certain people be given more data protection? And what you're saying there is, well, Donald Trump in this case has been given more data protection than me or you or anybody else. So you kind of have having a bit of a two-tier system in terms of, right, well, these people, for whatever reason, are deemed to be individuals that need extra protection because of their status in society or whatever they do, whereas everybody else falls into a different bucket.
Yeah, just us plebs.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. I just care if you see your tweets. What are you going to tweet about and DM about? But yeah, so you've got a bit of a two-tier system maybe. But I think that also links back to the point of, well, do people have, people who work for Twitter who are, you know, using these admin dashboards, you know, if I'm working there with you, do we both have access to everyone's Twitter, or do we have access to a subset? You know, do I have access to 10% or 20%, or is it a true near God mode access that you can see everybody's tweets, everybody's DMs? Because I think before we came onto the podcast, you were saying, like, you know, it would be interesting to know if they're there to moderate, and you know you're using this dashboard to moderate and to remove hateful speech and things that shouldn't be there. Well, why do you need the ability to write a tweet and to post a tweet? I think that's a really good point that you made.
Yeah, you just wouldn't, would you? As far as I can see, like, why would you need the ability to add or edit? Like, I think it should just be like a totalitarian regime. Like, if you say like hurtful, stupid things, ban. Like, okay. People don't need you on. People don't need you to be like spreading hate in the world, do they?
Yeah.
Just don't give them a platform.
But then Twitter won't have any income. They won't be able to make money if people, you know, staring at
content. No ads.
Exactly. Yeah. You need people going to see what's Donald said today and stuff like that for their business model. But no, I see your point. I think maybe ban. But even if just delete for now, like, why do you need the ability to post, to write, if not just to delete? And I'm really interested in the DMs. Can they get into the DMs? That would be, because again, imagine that. I mean, there must be under NDAs and other kind of clauses there if you have access to those, that kind of information. But it just comes back to, I guess, basic security, doesn't it? When we say if we're working with a company and we're looking at access control, you know, how many account levels do you have? You know, what access do they have? You know, what read-write access? And then who has access to those sort of accounts, or who is given those access levels? And it's very easy to sort of just give everybody, you know, everyone's an admin, you know, everyone can do everything. It's like
local admin trap.
Yeah, exactly. And whereas actually, no, all these people need to do is be able to delete people's tweets that they, because that's their role in Twitter. And not only do they just have to be able to delete people's tweets, maybe they don't have to be able to delete everyone's tweets, because you only have access to 5% of the Twitter population, you know, usernames A through D, something like that, rather than going have access to everything, which then means if there is an incident, like what's happened, well, only 5% of potential accounts are compromised, something like that. And also you can't tweet. But to go on that same vein, if we're talking about this theoretical super god mode, maybe that's the account that was compromised. Because you always have to have a super admin. Like, there's no way to not have that one account that is, you know, right at the top.
Yeah, like, well, just the principle of least privilege, isn't it? That's like the underlying sort of thing that, like, I don't know, maybe all of us can learn from that, as you said, just don't give anybody any more access than they need at that time, I guess.
No, I agree. Yeah. I've seen that for years. This existed in the 1980s, I think. Not that I'm that old, but that principle of least privilege, it's always been there. And I think, yeah, it's a good example. So I will be interested to see. I hope we get more information, and then we can kind of have a bit more of a discussion about it, because, you know, it might show that actually, you know, whilst the hack did occur, Twitter did have certain checks and balances and controls in place, as you would hope and imagine with a company of that size with that much data. Or it might show that actually their internal access control model was pretty poor, regardless of the way the hack happened. Because, you know, if you assume that at some point you will be hacked, the point is, once someone does get into your system, how much can they do? How far can they go? And in this case, they were shown to have gone very far and to be able to do a lot, really.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, like, as the details, but I mean, we're definitely going to be talking about this over the next couple of weeks or months as the details come on there. I can see there being like a part two to this when we get all of the information, all of the juice that we need. But
definitely have to. Well, I'm running out of Netflix shows to watch, you see. So this is now a new form of entertainment, isn't it? Brilliant. So yeah, I think that's all. I'm out. I've got nothing more to say about it until we get more information. Anything else you want to add, Luke?
No, just looking forward to more of it coming out, I think.
Definitely. Cool. Well, thanks for listening, and hopefully see you all soon.
Bye.